Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, and proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Aramithius, and today I'm discussing a puzzle that most people seem to have an opinion on, if not a totally well thought out answer. We're discussing a trend that split societies, has transformed gods, and turned the course of wars, all the while being something that seems to be frowned upon but not quite illegal for much of Tamriel's history. Today we're asking, why worship a Daedra? Before we kick off with that though, I just wanted to say thanks to Pause. I've been having some great discussions with them on the Lawseekers podcast Discord about the nature of Akatosh, among other things. We're currently going through some of the peculiarities of Bosmer ancestry, but the stuff that's relevant for now is that Pause has pointed out that as Shazar was, in a sense, created as part of the formation of the Eight Divines pantheon, and the pantheon was the creation of Alessia, as per Shazar and the Divines that we looked at last week, then Alessia possibly created Akatosh as well as part of that. This is possibly backed up by Alessia calling on Kyne through Mara rather than Akatosh if you look at the detail of the Song of Pelennor, which is probably the oldest text we have talking about the rebellion. I was a little skeptical at first, I must admit, as the book that we were discussing has Akatosh down as an Aldmeri god, which strikes me as one of the ways you synthesize the Nords and the Altmer. You bring together some of the Moorish gods, some of the Nordic gods like Shor and Shazar and that sort of thing in order to make the synthesis work. But then you've got a particular Loremaster's archive that suggests that there was actually a name change at the time that the Divine's Pantheon was created. One of the in-character responses says that Akatosh was referenced under another name at that time, kind of pointing to Auriel as well. So I think it certainly seems possible that Akatosh was a creation of Alessia as well, if we're going through that. Thank you ever so much for pointing that out, and thank you for the conversation, Ports. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I also wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who turns up and joins me on the streams of Morrowind that I've been starting up. I'm streaming at twitch.tv/Aramithius, mostly on Friday nights and on occasional Sundays at the moment if we're not particularly inclined to watch the NFL. And if you're about then, it would be absolutely great to see you on stream. And if you want to send me an email on your perspective, please join the Written in Uncertainty Discord or send me an email at writtenanuncertaintypodcast@gmail.com. I also have a stream on the Robots Radio Discord, so if you want to head over and check that, there's a Written in Uncertainty channel where we can talk about the episodes there. I would absolutely love to hear what you think about the stuff I put out, and if you have any suggestions for questions that I could cover in this podcast as well, that would be absolutely great. Email details and the links to all of the Discords will be in the description of this episode. And now, on to the Daedra. As usual, I need to point out that this is my own understanding about Daedra worship and probably not the whole truth of the matter. Please make up your own mind on this, have your own opinions, rather than just taking what I say as gospel. And you can also check out the blog post that's accompanying this cast at writteninuncertainty.com/Daedra-worship. That'll have all the sources that I quote on here linked, so you can go through them and make up your mind at your own pace. First of all then, a quick recap on what Daedra are. The Daedra are those spirits, members of the Etarda, that refused to take any part in the creation of Mundus, and they instead made realms out of themselves in oblivion. The book Aedra and Daedra highlights a few big differences. to quote, "Aedra created the mortal world and are bound to the earth bones. Daedra, who cannot create, have the power to change. As part of the divine contract of creation, the Aedra can be killed, witness Lorcan and the moons. The Protean Daedra, for whom the rules do not apply, can only be banished." So, the Daedra in theory have little to connect them to the world, and little to give in the way of benefits to mortals. If they can't directly manipulate physics, then what could they do to benefit mortals? The traditional fantasy setup is that you worship the gods that give you the best harvests or an advantage in battle or things like that, which doesn't really seem to apply here. And I appreciate that that's an assumption that basically means that worship is some sort of quid pro quo arrangement, but I think there are three core reasons that the Daedra are worshipped, and power is only one of them. The other is because of a long-standing tradition that you're used to and brought up in, maybe, and also because of a personal preference for the lifestyle that a Daedra worshipper leads, and I'll be going through each of those in turn. I should note before I get started that the Chimer have examples of all of these reasons, so they'll be quite a common example that I bring up. And so firstly, the obvious one. Power. The Daedra can provide their worshippers with quite a bit of power through various means and bargains and items. This is quite commonly done through their artifacts, although Frustus of Elen here seems to think that, quote, "Most often, this power comes in the form of knowledge, the most seductive and least perilous-seeming of the Daedric temptations." I think this is possibly a little biased in line with Frustus' own desires. The thing that would tempt a scholar more than anything else is knowledge, and Frustus is something of a scholar. You may dispute how good a one he is, but he wants knowledge above all else, and possibly to be successful, but that's him. Not all Daedra actually offer knowledge, and the only one that I can immediately think of in that space is Hermaeus Mora, so it's not always going to be in the wheelhouse of all of the Daedra. Artifacts are the most visible sign of Daedric power in the games, and one that is brought up in the book Modern Heretics as one of several reasons to worship them, which we will get to later. These are objects of immense power, although they tend to come with caveats, or if you believe the book Famed Artifacts of Tamriel, or Tamrielic Lore, or any of the other names that that book's been republished under, most will disappear after a time just because they have a will and ability to do so. And artifacts are often offered as prizes by the Daedra because they want to be worshipped, and they want to be appreciated by those on Tamriel. According to Shazar's song in the Monomyth, to quote, "So the Daedra lords created the Daedric realms, and all of the ranks of lesser Daedra, great and small. And for the most part, the Daedra lords were well pleased with this arrangement, for they always had worshippers and servants and playthings close to hand. But at the same time, they sometimes looked with envy upon the mortal realms, for though mortals were foul and feeble and contemptible, their passions and ambitions were also far more surprising and entertaining than the antics of the lesser Daedra. Thus do the Daedra lords court and seduce certain amusing specimens of the mortal races, especially the passionate and powerful. It gives the Daedra lords special pleasure to steal away from Shazar and the Aedra, the greatest and most ambitious mortals." And this explains why Daedra interact with the mortals on Mundus, and why those with lots of power and the ability to make change on their own terms will worship the Daedra. It's a way for those with power to get more of it, although it's not necessarily granted on their own terms, and those that think they can best the Daedra will often try and do that as well. You look at some of the stories about Nocturnal in particular, and the tales for her artifacts. There are basically a long list of the amount of times that some hero or other has stolen one of her artifacts from her, as much as she's actually granted it to them. So, quite how much this is devoted worship, as much as the power play on the part of those mortals, is very much up for debate. And this also doesn't explain why your average person would worship the Daedra, because your average peasant tilling a field doesn't have much of a chance of getting the artifact that would allow them to affect a lot of change in the world. I think they're hoping for some sort of mundane blessing, similar to their interactions with the Aedra. We have this quote from Lady Cinnabar's rebuttal to Phrastus, the prevalence of Daedric worship on Tamriel. Quote, "On the contrary, it's easy to show that veneration for Daedra is widespread and widely accepted among the folk of Tamriel, despite the desires and opinions of priests and professors. Ask the hunter why he mutters a prayer to Hercene as he draws his bow. Ask the gardener why she asks Mephala to spare her vines from slugs and worms. Ask the guardsman why he invokes the valour of Boethia as he draws his sword. And one doesn't have to look hard to find worshippers of Sanguine during Carnival or Hermaeus Mora among scholars at any time." This seems to indicate what I would call folk belief, the idea that Daedra are invoked for the small blessings here and there that they can grant to help people with their day-to-day endeavours and bless their profession, kind of like a patron saint almost. It's not really worship in the usual way that we define it, it's more an invocation of the Daedra in some sort of transactional exchange. You mutter a prayer and expect a slightly better result. However, if this is true, then it runs a little counter to typical Tamrielic scholarly opinion. Daedra aren't part of creation, and therefore can't easily influence it. But we as players probably feel and know that that's rubbish with how we re-interact with the Daedra. They can and do interact with Nirn, they muck around with it, try to corrupt it, and do various things with it. And it's not just in the way that Cinnabar talks about. Although again, it's one step removed from Nirn's physics to manipulate artifacts and worshippers, I suppose. While Lady Cinnabar's examples suggest that the Daedra are influencing physics directly on some level. There's also several stories of the Daedra requiring something for their aid. Some sort of pact saying, well, if I will make you great if you will serve me, or if you will take this burden upon yourself, which isn't referenced in that passage. And these almost feel beneath the Daedra to actually do, unless there's some sort of broader goal in mind. So it's possible that this sort of folk belief isn't actually of interest to the Daedra. We don't really have much evidence either way. If we think about power more broadly, there are several demonstrations of power that show that the Daedra are capable of affecting change more than the Aedra. We have this line from Elsa Godhater in Oblivion.
"The gods don't do a damn thing. Do they even exist? How could anyone tell? Daedra lords, sure. They exist. They do things. Bad things mostly, but things you can see. The gods? They don't do a damn thing."
This is quite easy for us to put the lie to, given what Akatosh does at the end of Oblivion, but from an in-universe perspective, I think it's quite understandable. With the Aedra and the other gods quite distant, the Daedra are an option for worship simply because they leave a mark on the world that's more generally visible. And perhaps a less appreciated form of power is the Daedra's ability to change their worshippers through interaction with them, which kind of segues into some of our other reasons to worship the Daedra as well, which we'll get to. This is how the Chimer saw the House of Troubles. They were testing gods to be overcome and to make people better for it. That is, in fact, the whole reason that Veloth and his disciples left the Somerset Isles in the first place. Various sources say that the life of the old on Somerset had become decadent, that Veloth wanted a pure or more ascetic way of life, and so he embarked on a path of deliberate hardship to travel to Morrowind and worship Daedra. The House of Troubles performs this task of transformation to the Chimer. They are there to teach lessons to their worshippers and to make them into better people for the suffering that they go through, and potentially gods if you believe books like The Fall of Trinimac, which states that it was the entire reason for the Chimer leaving Somerset, that they were tempted away by Daedra saying they could make them gods. This is reflective of a real-world reality, actually. True change is always painful. If you want to lose weight, you have to eat less, exercise more, or both. If you want a promotion, you need to work harder than your current job requires. I've seen this described in Elder Scrolls lingo as cutting yourself into better shapes, which is what the Chimer were trying to do in worshipping the Daedra, and it also explains some of the things that are going on with Vivek and Mullah Iqbal in Sermon 14 of the 36 Lessons. If you look at that, there is the biting of new shapes into their spears, which represents Vivek using Mullah Iqbal to attain knowledge, potentially of Chim, because that's used as a word that Baal presents to Vivek during their encounter in Sermon 14. Mankar Cameron implies something similar through the commentaries on the Mysterium Xerxes, I think, where he equates the worship of Merun's Dagon with reshaping yourself from protonymic to the state of liberty that is Numantia. There's also partly the worship of the Magna Gay, I think. It's a bit of a monolatristic thing going on, where you focus on one god, but believe in and potentially venerate to an extent the other gods. But Dagon worship is definitely the main driver. I need to get my head around those commentaries a little bit more to precisely pass them out, but there's the overall feeling that I get from them, which is that correct worship of Dagon brings self-transformation, which can bring about liberty, which is something else, maybe. You'll typically see it pointed towards either Chim or Amaranth around the community, particularly as Mankar mentions Chim in the commentaries. However, I don't know precisely that I'd equate liberty with Chim just for that. I need to dig around with it a bit more, because liberty gets linked to Merunes, to paradise, and other quite explicit Daedric concerns, rather than Chim and the nature of the Arabis as such. Cameron does give a more straightforward reason to worship the Daedra, because of power, but because of their own, not what they offer their devotee. They are more worthy of worship because they are more primal, more original than the Aedra.
The Daedra are the true gods of this universe. Julianos, Dibella, and Stondar are all Lorcan's betrayers, posing as divinities in the principality that has lost its guiding light. What are scholarship, love, and mercy when compared to fate, night, and destruction? The gods you worship are trifling shadows of first causes.
There is a reason for that, which we'll get to a little later, but just remember for now that the Daedra seem to appeal to more primal instincts than the Aedra, which is linked to what they can do, more than what they can offer a worshipper as such. This may therefore be worship out of fear, but it may also be a simple acknowledgement that these are the most powerful beings around. There's a line from Nagasta in The Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, which goes something along the lines of that the Daedra are imposing enough to inspire the things they're connected to, that Sheogorath is the inspiration for and source of madness, that Merunes is the source of and driver for destruction, those sorts of sentiments, which is another reason to fear them and to comply with them, basically. But this is also similar in a way to how God responds to Job's laments in the Bible. If you look at how God responds to Job's point that he's done nothing wrong and is still being punished, you essentially get God reasserting his position of power and right to do what he wants because he's powerful. Most of the verses that where God actually speaks in that book are along the lines of, "Who are you to question what I do? If you know so much, show me how to run the universe." By Mankar's logic, and Elsa's too, I guess, from that is that the Daedra can hold you in their power very easily, and so deserve worship because might makes right, because they can control things and you can't. Mankar also makes an appeal to truth in his claim that Lorcan is a Daedra, and that Tamriel is Merun's Dagon's birthright. It's a deserted plain that's been left to Merunes, and that it functions according to the laws of a Daedric plane, so to speak. That would make Daedra worship the actual truth, that if you appealed to the Daedra as the loyal servants, potentially, of Lorcan, or at least Lorcan's equals, then you're complying with the fundamental nature of reality in a way that you don't if you follow the Aedra. we don't have a lot else to back this up, apart from Cameron's claims that the Aedra are just simply traitorous spirits and servants of Lorcan who betrayed him. But it does seem to hint at a few things that we see in the Elder Scrolls, particularly that Lorcan isn't really dead or entirely absent, that he's hanging around a bit too much compared to what we would expect from a dead god. The next reason to worship the Daedra that's on our list is tradition. This is the main driver of the Khymer's worship for much of their history, so far as I can tell. It falls under the broader category of ancestor worship as well, which actually makes up a surprising portion of the pantheons in the Elder Scrolls in general. There were some comments made in the Redguard Forum Madness from some of the developers, I think Kirkbride, that suggested that the Dunmer started to see the Daedra as their actual ancestors. This is referenced in the book Aedra and Daedra, which says that, quote, "This distinction, that is between ancestor and not ancestor, was crucial to the Dunmer, whose fundamental split in ideology is represented by their mythical genealogy. The Khymer, or Dunmer, aren't the only culture that sees the Daedra as their ancestors either. The Orcs have a direct ideological and ancestral link to the Daedra. Some Orcs claim Malakath or Morlock as their ancestor, although his exact status in their view is a little foggy. We understand that Malakath or Morlock is a Daedra in how he presents himself to the world and interacts and has a plane of oblivion and so on. But we also have this quote from Lawrence Schick from a writer's AMA on Reddit for ZeniMax, to quote, "Some Orcs in the Covenant have been deliberately referring to Malakath as Morlock so as to sort of whitewash the fact that they worship a Daedric prince." What? Morlock a Daedric prince? No, not a bit of it. And this shows that the Daggerfall Covenant Orcs are intent on ancestor worship rather than Daedra worship as such. Their attitude to the more traditional, in air quotes, story of Malakath's origins is kind of telling here. They consider it heresy that their god ancestor was created from a Trinomach that Boethia mutilated and then expelled, and instead hold that Morlock did it to himself. It was an act of self-mutilation because of the shame of being defeated. This looks rather like the only real example of reluctant Daedra worship, if you like. That the entity that's being worshipped is not disputed. They don't say that they're not worshipping Morlock or Malakath, but they do dispute what sort of a being he is. So there's that kind of ambiguity there. They don't really want to be seen to be worshipping a Daedra. Well, despite the view of the Daedra being their ancestors, the Khymer and the Dunmer have a much more utilitarian view of the Daedra compared to the Orcs. The Khymeri exiles settled in Vardenfell and continued worshipping the good Daedra and using the House of Troubles as a foil to make them into better people, but this may have ultimately become a habit if you believe the Tribunal. In Vivek's recounting of the Battle of Red Mountain, Vivek has Sothisil saying this, to quote, "The old gods, that is the Daedra, are cruel and arbitrary and distant from the hopes and fears of Myr." Set is claiming here that the Daedra are no longer working for the Dunmer, that they're no longer improving them. But if you look at Orthodox Khymer worship and, to an extent, Dunmer worship, they'll still attribute an awful lot of their cultural progress to the Daedra, particularly Boethia. We also get the sense from the book Invocation of Azura that the Dunmer, and maybe the Khymer as well, worship the Daedra out of a sense of familial duty, even those for whom the worship is banned. The author of the invocation, Sigilla Parate, or however you pronounce that, I'm taking a stab, joined her grandmother's cult worshipping Molag Baal, and it's seemingly done because it was her grandmother's cult. It kind of feels like a coming of age thing. The fact that it was illegal doesn't seem to bother Sigilla at all, but it was just the thing to do because it was what her family did. And this is reiterated to an extent in Modern Heretics, which states that, quote, "Some more traditional Daedra worshippers are motivated by piety and personal conviction." That personal piety and conviction typically goes against society in some way, particularly given the slant that modern heretics put on that worship. Unlike the Daedra don't typically have values that support a stable society, even with the sort of fudge that the Chimera did. The traditional virtues that Boethia, Mephala, and Azura espouse, they're mostly about overthrow, plotting, and stealth. Those are values that will help a revolutionary movement survive and succeed, which they needed to get out of Somerset, but aren't really conducive to producing a stable society. The Tribunal reshaped Dunmurry society to produce just those virtues: humility, generosity, grace, daring, and all the rest, which are essentially about stability, with some capacity to take risks as required, but otherwise being quite unified and stable and loyal to authority. Sigilla is also a great case of the next reason for worshipping a Daedra, that of personal preference. Throughout her book, she is after a Daedra that cares for her and values what she can contribute. She goes through worshipping a wide range of Daedra, and her reasons for rejecting them are almost all personal, rather than related to what we would think of as her faith and the reality of it as such. She leaves Molag Bal because the worship of Bal killed her grandmother and she doesn't like the idea. She leaves the cult of Boethia because, to quote, "Boethia cared little for her cultists, she cared only for our blood." She goes too nocturnal initially because, to quote, "At last I had found the personal mistress I had so long desired," but leaves when she, quote, "recognized the futility of unraveling her," that is Nocturnal's, "enigmas." And then goes to Azura because she, quote, "is the only Daedra princess I have ever worshipped who seems to care about her followers." Sigilla is worshipping the Daedra that gives her the greatest sense of self-worth and self-validation. She doesn't really care about power or even principle, really. It's all about her personal preference. And it's the same with Ayala the Huntress of the companions in Skyrim. She carries on being a werewolf and worshipping Hircine even after you complete the questline, because that's what she enjoys doing. It's down to a lifestyle choice, rather than any real absolute truth as such. Part of this is, I think, a consequence of having multiple gods that are obviously present, but we don't see much in the way of strict polytheism in Daedra worship outside of the Chimera or Dunmer. Most cults in other Tamrielic cultures are focused on one specific Daedra, rather than acknowledging and worshipping them all in their turn. Daedra worship here is definitely about a personal relationship and a preference, rather than the faith in the sense of belief in something that may or may not be the case. It's worship in the sense of, I will worship this because I want it to be the case, because I enjoy the fact that this is the case, which is more to do with lifestyle than anything else. And that concludes our look at the main reasons to worship the Daedra. It's not just something that's done by bad people in the Elder Scrolls, it's something that's done for several reasons and in many different ways. Let me know what you think on the Written in Uncertainty Discord, or drop in on the Robots Radio Network Discord. Links to both are in the episode description. And if you want to support the show, drop me a tip at Ko-fi, which is at ko-fi.com/Arimathias. That's ko-fi.com/Arimathias. Or become my patron at patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. Patrons get access to the notes I make for each episode, as well as getting access to all my content across podcasts and YouTube, everything, a day early. I'm also running a lore-based stream of The Elder Scrolls 3 at the moment. You can check that out at twitch.tv/Arimathias. And as I said, I'm generally running that on what is Friday evenings for me, starting around about 7 p.m. British time generally. So that will put it at around about 2 p.m. or so Eastern time generally. But if you can join me, I would absolutely love to have you come along. Next week, we're looking at another Elder Scrolls text in depth, at the Father of the Nibben, thanks to a suggestion from Songbird on the Written in Uncertainty Discord. And until then, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and presented by Aramithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. You can find Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Brad. We're lifelong friends.
And the hosts of the Film and Whiskey Podcast. This is the show where each week we review a classic movie and a glass of whiskey.
That's right. Every week we go in-depth on a well-known movie while sampling the best from the world of scotch, bourbon, and more.
Because nothing goes better with strong opinion than equally strong liquor.
Bob's a movie nerd.
Brad's an average Joe.
But together, we give fresh insights and hot takes on the world of movies and spirits.
So check out the Film and Whiskey Podcast,
part of the Robots Radio Network.
Hey friends, this is Robots, the creator of the Robots Radio Podcast Network and host of the two original shows on the network, the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. These two shows have rocketed up the iTunes charts. They both together have over 150 five-star reviews in only a couple of months, with bite-sized episodes that take you step-by-step through the background of the games and the game worlds. They're thought-provoking, well-produced, and a lot of fun. I recommend you go check them out at robotsradio.net or on any podcast, reader, podcatcher, whatever you use, iTunes, Spotify. Again, that's the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, available everywhere.